Author, researcher, lecturer Lloyd Pye has more than 30 years of experience of writing and speaking about the origins of life. Lloyd is also the caretaker of the very famous Star Child skull and believes that it could make history as big as history can be made. It's been a while since we had an update from Lloyd on the project, and here he is this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, welcome back.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
Brand new listeners always coming to the fold. Lloyd, give us a very brief history of the Star Child.
The Star Child is a real, true bone skull found in Mexico about 1930. Woman that found it thought it was a deformity, kept it till she was dying in the early 90s. When she died, the skull eventually made its way to Ray and Melanie Young. Melanie was a neonatal nurse. She knew that it wasn't a standard deformity. She didn't know what it was, but she knew it wasn't a deformity. As she understood deformity, she wanted to know what it was. She contacted me. That was in the early part of 99, so we're pushing up on 12 years with this thing now, trying to prove one way or the other what it is genetically, and we're at the point now where we are able to get that proof.
What has driven you so long with this, Lloyd? You do not give up, my friend.
Well, because by the end of 99, I knew that it wasn't entirely human. I didn't know what it was. I couldn't say. But, you know, I went from seeing it first in February of 99, believing it had to be a deformity. I mean, really, what else can you think when you see something like
sure.
this? Well, yeah, it's really weird in a lot of ways, but it's just got to be a deformity. It can't be an alien or an alien-human hybrid. I mean, it just couldn't be. And then by the end of that year, I had talked to so many experts, and I had had so many people who knew about different parts of the skull, who knew about eyes, who knew about ears, who knew about brains, who knew about, you know, the shapes, the bone. And I'd talk to each of them, and they'd say, well, you know, I can't explain my part of it, but it's really probably a deformity, you know. Same thing. It's just that even they would be baffled. But by the end of it, I could see that nobody could explain the weird combination of physical differences, and so you know, I knew that it was something very special. But to prove it, we had to have the DNA, and in 99 it was the Stone Age of DNA recovery. There were only six labs in the world that could recover ancient DNA, and we knew that the Star Child was 900 years old, and ancient is beyond 50 years of age. So there just wasn't the capacity then, and we had to wait, you know, patiently for that capacity to develop to where it is now, which will allow us to do everything we need to do with it.
What do you think you will find out with DNA testing?
Well, we know now where it is and what's going to come out of a total genome recovery. It's going to show that the Star Child is radically different from a human. When all this time we've been thinking that it would fall, the difference would fall somewhere between a chimp and a human, and that's 3% of the entire genome. Now, everybody should understand that a genome is 3 billion base pairs in total. So that's an awful lot. But chimps and humans are 97% the same, very, very similar. Only 3% makes a difference. Now, that's 90 million base pairs, so there's a lot of room to roam there. But nonetheless, excuse me, it's still very similar. So we assume that the Star Child, because we have known since 2003 that it was some kind of human-alien hybrid, we just couldn't prove that either, but that we knew that. So we assumed it would be in that window because it couldn't be more different than a chimp. You could look at the skull and see that.
And are you tipping, Lloyd, to the human-alien hybrid theory as opposed to some different kind of species that truly just hasn't been discovered yet on this planet?
Well, yeah, because right now we know that part of its DNA is, in fact, human or very much like human, and its mitochondrial DNA, we know from 2003, is human. So it had a human mother. It came out of a human female's body when it was born. Or, excuse me, or at least it came out of the egg of a human female. Now, whether
right.
it actually came out of her body or whether it came out of a test tube, you know, a large jar of liquid or something, we don't know that for sure, but it came out of a female egg because its mitochondrial DNA is human. but nothing else about it seems to be human. Its father doesn't seem to be human. Its physiological traits don't seem to be, well, are not human. So there's something weird going on. And you asked earlier what the difference would be. Here's the difference that our geneticist, since the start of this year, has been finding. Rather than it falling within the window of 3% difference, he feels like, just roughly estimating with partial recoveries, but a rough estimate, it's going to be within 10% at a minimum to 50% at a maximum. So that is hugely, hugely different from what, you know, what you would expect even for a human-alien hybrid.
Because,
so we're really not sure how to explain it at this point.
Because it is not totally human, you might be able to get around any cloning problems. Would you advocate cloning this creature, this entity?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily resist it, but it doesn't matter what I or you or anyone listening thinks. The morals of the issue of just stem cell. I mean, look where we are right now.
Oh,
we can't
know.
Even get stem cells done. So we can't even think about that with this generation. And when I say generation, I mean literally tens of thousands of people are going to have to die who are in power right now. And a new generation is going to have to come up and take their place before we can even think about things like that.
Where is the Starchild skull now, Lloyd?
It's in a bank vault where it always stays when it's not, you know, on display. It's locked away very carefully.
And there's no problems because it is all bone. There's no decomposition here, right?
No, it's just about like being in the cave where it was for 900 years. You know, they're climate controlled and very safe. So there's just no degradation. It's had a really like a charmed life. Being buried in a mine tunnel has allowed it to stay relatively fresh as bone goes for 900 years. We've had easy, whenever we could recover, we've had easy recoveries. Even the most recent one with the advanced shotgunning technique that was done this year to recover its nuclear DNA, what could not be recovered in 2003, that came up very easily too. It's there. It's fresh. We knew that. We knew that in 2003. You could see that the human found with it, its mitochondrial and its nuclear DNA came up very easy and clear the first attempt. And
right.
The Star Child's mitochondrial DNA came up easy on its first attempt. So we knew it. The nuclear DNA was there. We just couldn't recover it with human only primers because it's not a human. So the trick was, how do you prove what it is? And that's where we are now. We're in position to be able to recover the whole genome of whatever. We assume it's going to be around 3 billion base pairs. A human's around 3 billion, a chimp's around 3 billion, a gorilla's around 3 billion. A Neanderthal, ironically enough, is substantially more than 3 billion. But whatever the Star Child turns out to be, we'll be able to recover most, if not all of it, and then we'll be able to compare it piece by piece, literally base pair by base pair, gene by gene, to see what the differences are. And out of that is going to come that percentage of difference that we talked about earlier. And it'll be, again, somewhere between 10 and 50%, but mind-bogglingly different than a human. So there will just be no, you know how it was with the Hobbit or anything that's different.
Right.
It allows scientists to say, well, it's just some weird thing. It's just some freak of nature. It's just some, you know, it's a human. It's a kind of human. It's just a different human. They're not going to be able to say that about the Star Child. They're just going to have to choke it down, like it or not, that this is an alien, and they're going to have to live with it, deal with it, adapt to it, that there was at least one alien alive on Earth and died on Earth 900 years ago. But the big story is that we may very well be able to prove that it was a genetically engineered being. And that's what all this radical difference in the DNA opens that window to proving that it was genetically engineered.
And it backs up the work of Zachariah Sitchin.
Exactly. Once you can prove that happened 900 years ago, genetic engineering 900 years ago, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to begin to open your mind to the possibility that maybe we are genetically engineered the way that the Sumerians wrote, the way Sitchin believes, the way I believe. I think all the evidence is there. All you need is there right now in the human genome to say we're a genetically modified species.
Lloyd, are you getting any other anthropologists out there jumping up and down saying, let's study this, let's study this? You seem like you've been at this almost by yourself.
You know, it's really hard to get them to come on board because, as you, I'm sure you of all people know with this show, there are things in politics you can't do, like touch Social Security, for example. That's called a third rail. Touch it, you're dead, right, in your career. Well, if you're a scientist, if you're a mainstream scientist, you touch UFOs or aliens, that's a third rail, you're dead. You touch Bigfoot, that's a third rail, you're dead. So they avoid it like the plague, so it's really hard. Even if they go home at night and they tell their wives or whatever, oh, honey, you won't believe what I saw today, wow. But, you know, they can't openly in front of their friends show any interest, or they, you know, they can lose their jobs, they can lose their funding, they can lose grants, they can, you know, all you need to do is look what happens to people like John Mack when they openly get interested in things like this. Harvard tried to fire him. I mean, he's well-respected.
No doubt about it. Lloyd, let's talk a little bit more about that, and we'll take some phone calls. Lots of our listeners have been interested in talking to you for a long, long time. We'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. And we're with Lloyd Pye here on Coast to Coast AM. Lloyd, the human remains that were found near the Star Child, possibly the mother, perhaps maybe a caretaker, is that possible?
Well, definitely not the mother. So, yes, caretaker, friend, lover, something. Definitely something close, because she was willing to bury it and then kill herself, lay down beside it, and commit suicide. So a very dramatic story, very romantic in its own way, but she was definitely not its mother. We prove that in the genetic test of 2003.
And we talk about the Star Child Project as if it's a child. I mean, what's the possibilities that you might find out that the age of this creature might have been 50 or 60? Who knows?
Well, it wasn't a child. Calling it a child was a big mistake, one of the early mistakes that we made. But that was, you know, the information was given to us when the first x-rays were taken, and they found that in the separate piece of maxilla there were teeth buried in the maxilla above the teeth that were visible. They said, well, you got teeth down, you got teeth up in the bone, that's going to be a child about 5 or 6. So we called it Star Child, and that immediately prejudiced scientists, as if it wasn't difficult enough to begin with. That immediately prejudiced all science against us, because they said, well, we'd already decided that it was alien, but, you know, right out of the box, and so they just couldn't have anything to do with it. It was an excuse to not get involved. But so it isn't that we never got any scientists at all. There's some of them out there with real courage, with real bravado, real gunslingers, but they're hard to find. Most of them are just very timid and toe the party line, and you know, that's the way they live their lives, and it's okay. But we every now and then find one that'll help us, and we use that when it happens.
Good for you. Let's go to the phones. Jackson, Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Carl's up with us. Hey, Carl, thanks for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
No, I didn't really have a question per se. I'm actually Mr. Pye's nephew-in-law. My wife is his niece. And I listen to this show sometimes at night when I'm patrolling, and just so happens it came on. I was like, Uncle Lloyd is on there, so
there
it's
you
good.
Go.
Yes, it's good to hear it, because I haven't heard it in great detail, so I'm glad to be able to hear this in great detail tonight.
There you go, Lloyd.
Yeah, Carl is a preacher looking for a church, so if anybody out there in the Jackson area knows a church looking for a good preacher, there he is.
Super. All right, next let's go to Vic in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Vic, go ahead.
Okay, hi there, you guys.
Hi.
I've been reading a lot of what Mr. Pye has said about Bigfoot, and I found that, yeah, it is right. He's on the nose. He has to be, because everything falls into place. I have pictures of Bigfoot, and I know it's real. Thing is, what are we going to do after we find out that, yes, this skull is, in fact, a hybrid from 900 years ago?
Well, that's a good question. What do we do if you find out for sure, Lloyd?
Well, we better start thinking along those lines, George, because we have found out for sure. We found out in pieces, and now really it's just a matter of finding someone who's willing to invest in the recovery of the genome and all that goes with that to allow us to prove it to a level that science can't argue with. Right now, they can argue because we only have pieces and we don't have the whole thing. But those pieces are representative of the whole thing. So we know where we stand. We know what we're going to get. So everybody better start thinking in those terms. It's going to happen. It's already happened. The bullet's already out of the gun. Most people just don't realize that yet. But it is out of the gun, and it's on the way to the target, and it's going to hit it. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I wonder if you can get the History Channel or Discovery interested in funding this. Because for exclusivity,
I don't think so, and because of the costs involved, it's a lot more than they usually pay for, episodic TV.
Yeah.
This is beyond what we thought it was. The last few times you and I have talked about it, that would have been a possibility, but now we're looking at a story that is going to be as big as landing people on the moon. So we're not talking about TV anymore initially. We're talking about films, movies, like what Michael Moore produces or what Al Gore produced. We're talking an in-theater documentary-type level event. So, in fact, two of them, not just one, two of them. So it's a much bigger deal than it was before, which is why it's going to require the participation of somebody who can handle something like that. But on the upside, as we all know, a lot of good is going to come from that. A lot of money, a lot of recognition, a lot of everything. So anybody who gets involved in it's going to be in for a heck of a ride.
Absolutely. Blair is in Sedona, Arizona. Haven't heard from you for a while. Blair, go ahead.
Hi, George. Well, I just finished reading your conspiracy theory at the conclusion of Journey to the Light.
Aha.
The question is, how many of us will it take for a Buckminster Fuller termed critical mass of consciousness events occur, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Lloyd, I was allowed through a common friend of both of ours, Marina, back in 1999 to hold your Star Child skull in the back of a print and copy store in Sedona. Remember, you had us wear some cotton gloves? And it was like a wafer cone, like an ice cream cone wafer cone thin, but it was the weight of a styrofoam piece of ball or something. It was absolutely fragile. I remember that intensely.
Yeah, we were very freaked out by that. You might remember at the time how much care we took with it until we found out that it was much more durable than the human one. We were completely fooled by that. But, you know, we didn't know. It did. It seemed like a dried gourd in comparison to the human skull. Very, very different. But then later, when it came time to actually cut it to take out pieces for sampling, we found that we could hardly get the blade through the Star Child's bone, whereas the human bone, you know, cut like it normally did. So big surprise for us to find out how durable the Star Child's bone is. And later we found out that the biochemistry of its bone is completely different than human bone. It's more like tooth enamel all over, even though it's much thinner, much lighter, it's much harder like tooth enamel instead of bone.
Lloyd, on your intervention theory on your website, you show a picture of Pluto to the sun with Earth, the seventh planet, in.
Right.
How did you get that representation? Was that a cuneiform from the Sumerians?
Well, no. The photograph that you're talking about was just in a magazine at some point, and it surprised me as well. But yeah, the Sumerians, they called Earth the seventh planet because they counted from the out in, and they counted 12 planets. So anyway, the Sumerians knew that Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto were out there long before humans knew it. And so obviously they had some sense of awareness of what it was like to come into the solar system from the outside.
Lloyd, you're constantly updating your website with information on the skull, right?
Right.
Okay. And it's the Lloyd Pye one? That's the one I still have.
No. The Star Child one is starchildproject.com. www.pyhistorycenter.com. And we're actually in the process of updating it quite a bit right now, as a matter of fact, adding all the new information. The new information that's come to us is required a lot of revamping of what we had because, as we said earlier, it's really changed the fundamental mechanics of what we were trying to do, what we thought we ought to be doing, and where we were going to go with it and what we would be able to prove. We used to really sweat and hope that it would come out closer to being more different than closer to a chimp, like closer to 3% than closer to a human, so that we'd have some arguing ground. Now we've got so much arguing ground, it's not even an argument anymore, you know. So it's just a completely different game, and we're trying to change everything that needs to be changed in order to accommodate the new reality that we're dealing with.
All right, and I'll make sure Lex has that link, StarChildProject.com, right?
StarChildProject.com, and there you can get on the mailing list. You can order the ebook, which is the cheapest, easiest, and quickest way to bring yourself up to speed on what the Star Child is all about. And I would urge everyone to get on the mailing list, and if you can, get the ebook and familiarize yourself with this, because it really is history in the making, and you're going to want to be the first one on your block to have your boy come home in a box. That song, you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, this is sort of the same thing. Be the first one on your block to know about this, because it's good when it breaks, when we can afford to put it out, you know, on the mainstream media. It's going to break when we've really got it nailed down. It's going to break very, very big, and it'll be fun to be able to say, yeah, well, I've known this for a while now.
Yeah, we can say I told you so, right?
Right, exactly that.
Let's go east of the Rockies, probably as far east as you can get. I'll be in Maine. Jimmy's there. Hi, Jimmy, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, Jimmy.
I just was listening about this. I believe it's the Star Child Project. That's the giant, or the skull, right?
Yep,
right.
That's it.
My question is, I've been on the internet, and I've seen on YouTube these pictures of, like, giant humans.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, like, I don't know if they're a hoax or not, but they got all kinds of pictures of guys digging up the bones in it.
Yeah, that's just photo. That was actually the winner of a Photoshop contest about, six, 7 years ago, something like that.
Oh,
and it
really?
Still goes
yeah.
around as
Great
brand
picture.
New and, you know, a big deal, and people get excited about it. But, yeah, that's just all fake, all fraud.
All right. See, that's what I was wondering, because I didn't know exactly. I've never seen the picture of what you guys are talking about or knew anything about this until tonight, and it's the first thing I thought of.
Unfortunately, all the fake and fraud stuff that's out there really, really muddies the water for the legitimate work that some of us do. And, you know, I'm obviously not the only one, but it makes it hard for all of us who are really trying to do good, legitimate work.
Right.
But it's just an unfortunate part of the world we live in now.
Right. Can I get one more question?
Yeah, Jimmy, sure thing.
Thank you. Appreciate it. The skull that you found where you're talking about, it's 900 years old and whatnot.
Right.
And you think it's genetically kind of not engineered, but I guess that's what you're saying, right?
We think it could well be genetically engineered, right? It's beginning to look that way.
So then that would mean it's a possibility that with the fact that 900 years ago, humans on the planet Earth didn't really have the technology to do that, do you think this could be all, like, alien stuff? Is that pretty much what you're kind of shooting for and thinking?
No question. There's no other answer. Obviously, humans couldn't have done that 900 years ago, so it could only be that aliens were here, and that aliens, if indeed we can prove the genetic engineering part of it, which we're beginning to think we might be able to, just on the numbers that we're coming up with, then there's no other answer, and it just sort of really just puts the last nail in the coffin of the argument that UFOs and aliens can't exist.
Lloyd, do we have any historical records or artist depictions of UFOs or craft in that region of the world?
Mexico?
Yeah, way back then.
That's a good question. I don't really know of any, but nobody's ever sent me any that I'm aware of. You're talking about, like, they have some stuff that looks very UFO-ish in Egypt, for example.
Exactly.
But the art in the Maya, and really that's the basis of the art that we have from the region of that time or that era, It's so strange. I really don't know. I haven't studied it to that extent, and nobody's ever sent me anything and said, "Hey, this was off of a Maya glyph. Does it look UFO to you?" Or, you know, no, that's never happened. So I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe somebody could look into it.
Linda is in Central Point, Oregon, on the first time caller line. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I was just listening to Richard Hoagland talk, and I was taking some notes down, and I read the Bible a lot, too, and it says the sons of God came down and mated with the daughters of men, mm-hmm. and there were giants in the land at that time. And it also says that people used to live for hundreds of years, you know, Methuselah and Abraham and all those. And then something changed, and our lifespan changed. So do you think that's because we're like a clone or a hybrid mutation that we don't live as long?
Right. I think we're genetically engineered, and I think we were genetically engineered to be slaves and servants. I think our intelligence is not nearly what it could be. It doesn't match up to what we carry in our heads and our brains. I think the existence of savants proves that. I think it's clear in our gene code, the fusion of our second and third primate genes, the inversion of nine other segments of genes that just couldn't be any other way except genetically engineered. I think all that's evidence that we are a genetically engineered species.
Okay, perfect. Lloyd, this is remarkable work that you've been doing, and I have to really, again, congratulate you on the staying power on this. And I know it's been costly for you as well. I mean, you've been going at this alone, you know, getting some donations to help you, but you've really stuck your neck out on this one, my friend.
I never thought it would go this long, and if I had it to do over, I think anybody would take a second look at it. I thought it was going to be 6 months in the beginning, and here we are almost 12 years later. And, yeah, it's been horribly, horribly costly to me. Had to go bankrupt along the line. I do live hand to mouth. It's not a good way to live. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. But as it stands now, the backside reward is going to be just enormous. And so I guess at the end of my life, if I get to live it out, I'll look back and this period will have been worth it. But it has been hard, and I appreciate you for noticing, you know, for noting that.
What do people say to you when they find out about the skull?
Well, the first reaction inevitably is what my reaction was. Well, that can't be true. I mean, God, everybody says no such thing, you know. If they look into it, if they learn more about it, if they just study it even a little bit and realize how many facts there are behind it, then they begin to realize, whoa, this really could be it. And it really is it. So I'm just assuring everybody, if you can be just patient a little while longer until we are able to get the funding that we need to recover the whole genome and do the work that needs to be done with it, we will absolutely prove beyond any shadow of scientific doubt that we'll not be able to say anything about it, that this was a human-alien hybrid of some kind that's going to prove to be dominantly alien. The human part of it is receding all the time. And I don't really know how to explain it other than genetic engineering. It can't be, you can't get this kind of percentage differential from a sexual union. It almost has to be genetic engineering. So it's a much bigger, more incredible story than ever.
It's kept in a bank vault. Do the folks at the bank know what that is? What's in there?
No. I'm sure they don't.
Let's go to Wilmington, North Carolina. Ryan, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead, first-time caller.
Hi.
Hi.
I've actually corresponded with Lloyd a few times here recently. The only comment I just wanted to make, the other caller had asked about the UFOs
mm-hmm.
and this area and, I guess, the ancient history or past history. And I want to say it's Palenque, the lid of Palenque or something like that. I'm not sure if it's a Mayan or an Aztec thing, but there's a...
Oh, yeah, you're right, Ryan. Yeah, I should have said that. That's true.
The lid of
the Palenque lid shows a guy that a lot of people say is...
That's Aztec, I think, isn't it?
No, it's a Mayan.
Oh, it is Mayan,
but
okay.
It's definitely a Mayan, and it looks like a god in a spaceship, but the mainstream just says, no, it's, but you're right. Absolutely. I should have thought of that I apologize. There is that one big glaring one that I, you know, thank you for reminding us, Ryan.
And it looks true. Like he's holding gears and
exactly.
Levels,
has
levers.
Has his foot down
like
on
that.
A pedal and all that. Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, that is a great picture.
I should have thought of that. I'm mea culpa. I'm sorry.
Lloyd, keep in touch, my friend, all right?
Thank you, George. Much appreciated. Thank you for having me on. And tell Linda to have a good show.
Absolutely.